أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. We finished the third khutbah of Nahj al-Balagha and now we start with the fourth khutbah. Of course, for several further khutbahs, there are very short ones, which is a selection of some sayings of the Imam addressed on different historical occasions. And Marhum Sayyid al-Radi has actually organized Nahj al-Balagha in a way that the first khutbah, of course, is a very general khutbah talking about the beginning of the creation, the creation of Adam, then the prophets, a very general thing. And then he comes to some historical khutbahs of Imam Ali, starting with khutbah Shaqshaqiyya, and then with some other khutbahs on different occasions, and then it goes to Mawa'id and Hikam and other issues. Now, the fourth khutbah, which follows Shaqshaqiyya, is something which is addressed after some historical occasion. I will mention that in the middle of the khutbah, because we cannot realize now what the Imam is talking about on that occasion. The theme of the khutbah is as the theme of many khutbahs of the Imams are after assuming the caliphate, after he became a khalif, and people started to disobey him and to break their pledges, he starts to mention his position, especially with regards to the guidance, with reference to the Quran, with reference to the Prophet, and what position did he have, so that the people might take heed and come back to their mind and follow him as a guide. Now, in this khutbah, as I said, it has a historical occasion. I will mention that later on. Where the Sayyid al-Razi starts the khutbah, because this khutbah has been reported in longer versions as well, Sayyid al-Razi has omitted all those things which were doubtful that they are part of this khutbah. And Abul Hadith says that I have seen other versions of this khutbah, and I know that some of them are additions to the khutbah, and what Sayyid al-Razi has chosen is for certain the words of Imam, and he has discarded whatever in which there was a doubt that it's the word of the Imam. So the khutbah, where how Sayyid al-Razi reported, starts like this: بِنَحْ تَدَيْتُمْ فالظلماء وتسنمتم ذروة العلياء. It was due to us, or because of us, or by us, that you were guided out of darkness. Now, when Imam says Bina, he means himself, well, the Prophet at the top and his family, including himself, including Ali alayhi salam. In many occasions in Nahj al-Balagha, this type of terminology is used. Us, we, by us, to us. And by all that he means the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt. And he boasts in a way that he's one of the Ahlul Bayt. Of course, not the boasting that ordinary people do, not without fakh, of course. He mentions the honor that Allah has given them. So he says, it was through us that you were guided out of darkness. وَتَسَنَّمْتُمْ ذُرْوَةَ الْعَلِيَىٰ. And you climbed to the highest peak, to the climax. Now you imagine what is the situation of the Muslims. Just 40 years after the, about 40 years after the migration of the Prophet to Medina, and after all those difficult time, tortures, hardships, difficulties. It's only 40 years that now Muslims are the center of the world. they have conquered Iran, Rome, Egypt, and all pieces of land around them, all great kingdoms and empires have been now taken by Muslims, conquered by Muslims. Now they have climbed to the climax now. And what Amir al-Mu'mineen mentions here to his companions that, okay, who guided you to this religion that you now have the support of Allah to have all these conquests? It was through us that you did it. بَنَحْتَدَيْتُمْ فِي الظَّلْمَاءِ وَتَسَنَّمْتُمْ ذُرْوَةَ الْعَلْيَاءِ. And you climbed to the highest climax of honor and dignity. وَبِنَا أَفْجَرْتُمْ أَنِ السِّرَارِ. Sirar is a special type of night in which the moon could not be seen. The last day of the month certainly is the day, the night which the moon could not be seen at all, even the crescent could not be seen, and the first night of the month. So a couple of nights at the end of the month and at the beginning of the new month, the moon could not be seen at all, even the crescent. Now in old days where there was no electricity, those nights were the darkest nights of the month or any period. So they had a special name for those nights called Sirar. Now Imam alayhi salam says that وَبِنَا أَفْجَرْتُمْ عَنِ السِّرَارِ. You were in Sirar. You were in that type of darkness. Complete, utter darkness. And it was through us that you came out of it. أَفْجَرَ means coming out of something. So وَبِنَا أَفْجَرْتُمْ عَنِ السِّرَارِ. It was you, because of us, that you came out of this dark night. Now why Imam is mentioning this? Because now he is facing lots of opposition. After he assumed Khilafah, he is facing lots of opposition. And everyone of course knew his position, his relation to the Prophet, the knowledge Prophet had given him. It was completely clear even at his own time. And people were disobeying. Some of them saying that, well, the way you are running the affairs, the Muslims will be depleted of power soon, and the conquests are stopped and everything. Now Imam is reminding them that all these conquests that you have, all this power that you gain, the treasures that you have grown from different quarters of the world, now who actually guided you to a religion which gave you this power? It was through us, meaning the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt. Then he says, وَقَرَ سَمْءٌ لَمْ يَفْقَهِ الْوَاعِيَةِ. Wa'iyah is mu'adha, is a speech, a word which influences the heart. Now, during the 5 years of his caliphate, Imam had lots of preachings, lots of admonitions for the people. They didn't listen, to the extent that in one khutbah that inshallah we will see later on, that he says that I am tired of you and you are tired of me. I'm tired of you because you never listen to me. You are tired of me because of all the preachings and admonitions that I address towards you. This was the situation. And now the Imam says that may waqara sam'un lam yafqah al-wa'ya, an ear that cannot hear and understand admonitions and preachings, may it be deafened. It is better that it is deaf. Why? I mean, what's the purpose of an ear? To hear things, to analyze, to understand, to be moved by it. But they were not moved at all by whatever Imam used to say. وَكَيْفَ يُرَاءِ النَّبْعَةَ. It seems that Imam is very angry in this khutbah. And I mentioned why he is very angry. وَكَيْفَ يُرَاءَ النَّبْعَةَ مَنْ أَسَمَّتْهُ السَّيْهَةَ. In terms of eloquence of literature, this is one of the khutbahs that everyone, Sayyid Radi himself that has collected Nahj al-Balagha, Ibn Abi al-Hadid, others, they say that this is the peak of eloquence. There is no parallel to this khutbah, especially to this khutbah in Arab sermons and Arab prose. So For those who know Arabic, they know what metaphors Imam has used and what type of language he has used in this khutbah. وَكَيْفَ يُرَاءِ النَّبْعَةَ مَنْ أَشَمَّتْهُ السَّيْحَ. Nab'a is a low voice. He says, my voice to you is low compared to the voice of the Prophet and voice of the Qur'an. Now, you heard the voice of the Prophet, you heard the voice of the Qur'an, you did not come to your mind. Now, how my voice is going to help to preach you and to guide you? وَكَيْفَ يُرَاءِ النَّبْعَةَ. How an ear can observe and can listen to a low voice while the sayha, the high-pitched voice has come and it was deaf, or it has deafened it because it went through it and through it, they did not take heed, it has been deafened. رُبِطَ جَنَانٌ لَمْ يُفَارِقْهُ الْخَفَقَانَ. And may Allah strengthen a heart that had never been separated from fear of him. Now, this is a dua that was a curse that the ears that do not hear may be deafened, and the heart which is with fear of Allah may be strengthened. Now, then he says, مَا زِلْتُ أَنْتَدْرُ بُكُمْ أَوَاغِبَ الْغَاتِ. For long I have been waiting, expecting the consequences of treachery for you, the consequences of breaking the pledge. For long I have been awaiting these consequences. Now, where this khutbah was mentioned, the historians say that this was after the death of Talha and Zubayr in the Battle of Jamal. Now, in the Battle of Jamal, you know that some of the companions, including Talha and Zubayr, they gathered a force, and since they were not so much respected among the people and they couldn't actually muster lots of force, what they did, they deceived Aisha, the wife of the Prophet, and brought her out of her home and made her a figurehead of the battle, saying that this army is being led and guided by Aisha, the Ummul Mu'mineen. Anyone who likes their mother, his mother, they should come to this force. It is the fight between your mother and an insurgent person. I mean, it is very easy to move people, to instigate them to a fight like that, especially when the Quran says that the wives of the Prophet are Ummahatul Mu'mineen. It was very easy to bring forward such a figure and move people by it and bring them to the army. Now, after they did this, of course, you know, the battle was not successful. The movement was not successful. They were defeated. Most of them were killed, including Talha and Zubayr. Now, the historians say that this sermon was address to the people actually on the body of Talha and Zubayr, and this is why Imam is so angry, because he didn't want Talha and Zubayr to be killed, certainly, especially Zubayr was his close relative and he liked Zubayr very much, and he had ordered that even in the battle you should not kill Talha and Zubayr. And when they were defeated, Imam alayhi salam, they came to Imam and Imam said, okay, leave, I have given you leave to go. And then on their way, when they were going, someone attacked them and killed them. And it was not known who killed them, actually. So he was so angry. And he was so emotional, probably, seeing that Talha and Zubayr were killed in that battle. And he is addressing, actually, them, that for long I have been expecting the consequences of your breaking your pledge, because this was a sin and you will see the consequences. There is no doubt that breaking a pledge, someone making a pledge with a caliph, especially a caliph accepted by everyone, then break that pledge is a sin. There is no controversy among Muslims in this. There is a very nice story between Shaykh al-Mufid and Ali ibn Isa al-Rumani. Now, Rumani was a very great scholar of the 4th century. And Mufid, you know that he flourished at the end of the 4th century. He was a very young student attending the lessons of the lectures of Ali ibn Isa. Ali ibn Isa was a person who was very much inclined to Shia, but he did not reveal that. He was teaching both Sunnis and Shias, and he was respected by both groups. Now, once in one of his lectures, of course, Mufid was a young man. He went to the lecture. He sat just by the door, and Ali ibn Isa was discussing about history, what happened after the Prophet, probably. And Shaykh al-Mufid, the young boy, the young man, posed a question. He said, Shaykhana, you say that Abu Bakr deserved to be a caliph because everyone paid allegiance to him. Now, what do you say about Hadith al-Ghadir? If it was the word of the Prophet, then paying allegiance to Abu Bakr would have been of no avail, because it was against the order of the Prophet, against the will of the Prophet, and any pledge given against the will of the Prophet is void. He said, my son, because he was, as I say, he was very young, he said, my son, Hadith al-Ghadir is a riwayah. Although it's mutawatir or whatever, it's a riwayah. What happened after the Prophet, people paying allegiance to Abu Bakr, is diraya. We know that it happened. And we know that all companions accept it. And if you want to condemn it, you are condemning all the companions of the Prophet. وَالْعَاقِلْ لَا يَدَعُ الدِّرَايَ لِلْرَوَايَ A wise person never leaves diraya for the sake of a riwaya. It's a riwaya. Now, some people have interpreted it in different terms, in different ways. So, why should we leave something which is diraya? We understand that people did it for some exigencies or for some reason, even if it was against the will of Prophet, everyone accepted it. And the companions, if they accepted it against the will of the Prophet, there should have been reason behind it. So, this is the riwaya, this is understanding, that's a riwaya. Now, a wise person never leaves the riwaya for the riwaya. Now, Mufid didn't say anything. That session finished. There came another day Ali ibn Isa was discussing this fight between Talha and Zubayr and Ali. Now, Mufid said, Shaykhana, what do you say about Talha and Zubayr? No, he said, Shaykhana, what do you say about someone who breaks the pledge, the allegiance he has paid to a caliph, a rightly chosen caliph? He said, kafir, and goes to hell. He said, okay, Shaykhana, what do you say about Talha and Zubayr? Do they go to hell? They are kafir. He said, no. He said, why? Because they broke their allegiance with Ali. He said, because they did Tawbah. Mufid said, how do you know? He said, we have a riwayah about it. He said, Shaykhana, breaking their allegiance is the riwayah, we know it. This is from what he said. But the Tawbah is a riwayah. وَالْعَاقِلْ لَا يَدَعُ الدِّرَايَ لِلْرَوَايَةِ How do you do that? And it was at that point, because he was very young, very young. And at that point, Ali ibn Isa said, أَنْتَ الْمُفِيدْ حَقَّ You are someone who has knowledge, and you can give knowledge. Who can give. So you are Mufid. Now, this breaking the allegiance of Talha and Zubayr is something that has puzzled lots of historians, theologians, how they have to approach this, because anyone breaking that allegiance is regarded as a kafir, as a disbeliever, and then what should we do about these two companions of the Prophet, that all companions of the Prophet should be regarded highly by all Muslims. So here Amirul Mu'mineen mentions that you broke an allegiance which was a great sin. And I was expecting this for you. Although they were killed despite his will, despite Amirul Mu'mineen's will. And he became so angry when they were killed that he had this type of khutbah, a very strong khutbah. However, he said, I was expecting the consequences of your breaking your allegiance, al-ghadra. Al-ghadr is khiyana, is betrayal. I were expecting this. Now, you might say, how Imam is addressing dead bodies? Because as historians say, he was actually addressing this towards Talha and Zubayr after they were killed. Now, we have the same thing coming from the Prophet as well, and this is mentioned in Ibn Hisham and other histories, that on the day of Badr, when many of the heads of Quraysh were killed, and they somehow dumped them in a well, 70 of them, they dumped them in a well, the Prophet went over the well, and he mentioned the people by their name. He said, Ya Utbat ibn Rabi'ah, Ya Shaybat ibn Rabi'ah, Ya Amr ibn Hisham, and Ya Fulan, Ya Fulan, Inna wajadna ma wa'adana Rabbuna haqqa. فَهَلْ وَجَدْتُمْ مَا وَعَدَكُمْ حَقًّا مَا وَعَدَكُمْ رَبُّكُمْ حَقًّا We found what our Lord promised us to be true. Because He promised us victory, He gave us victory. Have you found what your Lord promised you to be true? Punishment, of course, it was. And, of course, they couldn't answer, but the Prophet could hear the answer himself. So, he addressed the dead bodies. And we have in the Quran as well, for example, after the people of Samud were destroyed. فَقَالَ يَا قَوْمِ لَقَدْ أَبْلَغْتُكُمْ رِسَالَاتِ رَبِّي Salih stood upon them and said, O my people, I conveyed the messages of my Lord to you. وَنَفَحْتُ لَكُمْ I wished you good, وَلَكِنْ لَا تُحَبُّونَ النَّاسَهِ Here, of course, as the historians say, Amir al-Mu'min was addressing this to Talha and Zubayr. مَا زِلْتُ أَنْتَذِرُ بِكُمْ عَوَاقِبَ الْغَدْرِ I was expecting the consequences of your betrayal. وَأَتَوَسَّمُكُمْ بِحِلْيَةِ الْمُخْتَرِينَ مُخْتَر is someone who's deceived by Shaitan. I was seeing the signs of those who are deceived by Shaitan in your face. I was seeing it. However, حَتَّى سَتَرَنِي أَنْكُمْ جِلْبَابُ الدِّينِ Because you were wearing the dress of Deen of Islam, I couldn't say anything. I was seeing this in your faces, but Islam and Deen had actually prevented me from saying something to break your dignity and honor of religion. وَبَشَّرَنِيكُمْ صِدْقُ النِّيَّةِ However, since I have صِدْقُ النِّيَّةِ I have good intention. That good intention showed me what is inside your, what are you plotting, what's inside your heart. And this would show that if a person gets real sidqun niyyah, real true intention for God, then Allah would show them things that other people cannot see, that other people cannot understand from behind many veils that Allah has put between people themselves. So he said, Due to Sidqun Niyyah, I was seeing it. I was seeing the signs of deception in your faces. However, that Jalbabuddin, the dress of Deen that you are wearing, stopped me from saying anything. And now this is the end. We have come to this end. أَقَمْتُ لَكُمْ عَلَىٰ سَنَنِ الْحَقِّ فِي جَوَادِ الْمَذِلَّةِ I stood for you in the middle of the road, in a road in which there were lots of slippings and going astray. I waited there for you, stood there for you to come, to bring you back. But now you have disobeyed me, and this is the consequence. حَيْثُ تَلْتَقُونَ وَلَا دَلِيلٌ وَتَحْتَفِرُونَ وَلَا تُمِهُونَ I stood on a road to guide you, a road which you were looking for someone to guide you, there was no guide but me, and you were digging wells for water, but you did not reach the water. This is the end that you have come to. Then he addresses the people now. Now after, you know that Jamal was the first battle that Amirul Mu'mineen had. And it was very hard. I mean, the whole 5 years of his caliphate is full of hardship, difficulty, heart-rendering issues which really, really annoyed Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam. And one of them is this battle in which some companions of the Prophet were killed, in which he had to fight against Ummul Mu'mineen, against his own wish. He didn't have any grudge against Ummul Mu'mineen. He never had any intention to fight the wife of the Prophet. And that's why after the battle he had Aisha escorted by 20 women dressed as men to Medina, so that the respect of the wife of the Prophet is preserved. And no one would say afterwards that Amirul Mu'mineen disrespected the wife of the Prophet, disrespected Ummul Mu'mineen, and had men guarding over her. I mean, she had all these things. But you can imagine how difficult it was for him to go through all this. And really, I mean, if you imagine, you would say Ali really did not deserve all these difficulties. And this is why, as I mentioned, on the night that he was going to leave this world, as he mentions in Nahjul Balagha as well, that he just went into short sleep and came back and he said, Malakatni Ainai, my eyes possessed me, meaning that I went into sleep. فَسَنَحَ لِي رَسُولُ اللَّهِ Rasulullah came to my dream. And I just told him, Ya Rasulullah, مَاذَا لَقِيْتُ مِنْ أُمَّتِكَ مِنَ اللَّبَذِ وَالْأَوَنِ Ya Rasulullah, what did I see from your ummah? Why did I meet from your ummah? In terms of crookedness, in terms of betrayal, treachery. And this was really what he went through. I mean, it was very difficult. Then the most difficult one was the Muawiyah coming for after the blood of Uthman, the something in which Ali had no share and no part at all. And then, of course, fighting with Khawarij, with those people, with the apparent faith. Now, here he mentions, he addresses the people who are around him. Al-Yawm أُنْتِقُ لَكُمُ الْأَجْمَاءَ ذَاتَ الْبَيَاءِ Ajma is something that cannot speak. Not that cannot speak, it has no ability to speak at all. Now he says, today I make those things that cannot speak to speak for you with eloquence. Well, of course the interpreters of Nahjul Balagha has try to interpret this in different ways. For example, some of them say that, meaning that I will speak in a way that you will get preaching and admonition from everything which is around you. One meaning is that now today I'm going to speak. I did not speak for 25 years. Now I'm going to speak. And I'm going to mention things which I did not mention before. However, this also would not be a good interpretation, because Amirul Mu'mineen did not speak about many things which were in his heart and in his mind. Even during his caliphate, he did not speak about them. So here it means that things which happen, because this is in the context of Talha and Zubair now speaking about their betrayal by their action. Never anyone would have imagined that Talha and Zubair are going to betray someone to whom they had paid allegiance. Now, he says, now things will happen around us, that hearts which were quiet, tongues which were quiet, people who were quiet, now come forth and they will speak for themselves. And they will say which one of them were mu'min, true mu'min, which one of them were kafir, hypocrite. And this happened in his time. Even the Prophet said that, Ya Ali, you are the thing by which mu'min and munafiq will be distinguished from each other. Because the Prophet, when he spoke, everyone said, we believe in you. Even قالت الأعراب وآمنا, every day even the Bedouins come and say we believe. قل لم تؤمنوا, say, well, keep it slow. You had not say we are مؤمنون, say we are مسلمون now. ولما يدخل الإيمان في قلوبكم. Now, but after the Prophet, there was a test, a fitna. As the Quran says that they think that there is no fitna, no test. And the fitna and test came to Ali. And this is where the mu'min and munafiq were distinguished from each other. And this is why Amir al-Mu'min said, today I will make the unspeakable, or the thing that cannot speak, to speak for you eloquently. اليوم أنفقوا لكم العجماء ذات البيان أذب رأي امرئ تخلف عني. The opinion of anyone who disobeys me and opposes me is far away from truth. ما شككت في الحق مذ أريته. I have never doubted about truth the day I saw it. This is, of course, a very strong statement from Amirul Mu'mineen, that the first day I saw the Haqq from the Prophet, I never have doubted it. I am on that path. I am on the path of the Prophet. I am on the path of the truth. لم يوجس موسى عليه السلام خيفة على نفسه بل أشفق من غلبة الجحال ودول الظلال. Now, the question might come that if you really did not doubt about your haqq and truth, why did you keep quiet about all these things? Why today you want to speak about it? And why today you are going to distinguish between right and wrong? Why not before? He says, because I was afraid. And why were you afraid? Were you afraid of death? Were you afraid of calamity or what? He says, no. He brings a verse from the Quran. Of course, he doesn't mention the verse, but he gives an explanation. In Surah Taha, we have the verse that speaks about Musa and the Sahara, the magicians. When the magicians started to introduce their magic and put it forward, when the Musa saw the enormity of this magic, an overwhelming power of it, the Quran says, فَأَوْجَسَ فِي نَفْسِهِ خِيْفَةَ الْمُوسَى. Musa felt a fear in his heart. And then we said, قُلْنَا لَا تَخَفْ. He said, do not fear. Do not be frightened. إِنَّكَ أَنْتَ لَعَلَى. You are higher. Now, Amirul Mu'minin, this has been a question, that why Musa was afraid. Why was he frightened? Because he knew that this is magic. And he knew that his power is superior. His miracle is power of God. Coming and actually, as compared to them, is completely above everything. Why was he frightened? Amir al-Mu'min says that, لم يوجس موسى عليه السلام خيفة على نفسه. He was not frightened about himself for himself. He did not have a fear in the heart that these may defeat me and I may be killed or whatever. بَلْ أَشْفَقَ, I may be defeated. بَلْ أَشْفَقَ مِنْ غَلَبَةِ الْجُحَالِ وَدُوَلِ الظَّلَالِ. But he was worried that the ignorant people might think that his miracle is like that magic. And then the magicians might claim that they were victorious. Of course, Musa didn't know that that's speak that he had, which was going to be turned into a serpent, was going to eat all of it. Allah said, it will do that, all that magic. He thought that, well, how people are going to realize, how people are going to compare. And this is true, isn't it? How people were going to distinguish between Ali and other Sahaba? Even if he said that I'm true, I'm the truth. How they were going to distinguish? So he said, if I was frightened to speak, it was not because I didn't know what is truth, what is not truth. It was because I was frightened that people might not understand it. And then things would become confused and trouble, fighting and everything. So right from the beginning, I was not in doubt of Haqq and truth. However, take the example of Musa. He was not frightened because of the magician. For himself, he was frightened that the Juhal, the ignorant, might overcome, and the Dawal al-Zalal, her own, might take that magic as something which would deceive other people. Now, then he says, Al-Yawm tawaqafna ala sabil al-haq wal-batil. Today we are standing on a path which has two ways ahead of us, haq and batil. You follow me, you come to haq. You don't follow me, you certainly have gone to the other branch, which is batil. Man wathqa bima'in lam yazma. Whoever who relies on water, thinks that they have water, they are not going to suffer thirst. Meaning that you have water among you. Rely on that water and you wouldn't feel thirst anymore if you follow me. And of course, all this, as I said, it is mentioned in a position where Amirul Mu'mineen was posed against other companions, was posed against Ummul Mu'mineen, and he wanted to take the confusion from the addressees that do not be confused by what has happened, by the death of Talha and Zubayr. Now the next khutbah, I'm not going to go into details about it, but it speaks in the same vein in another occasion, and that is exactly after Saqifa and what happened. And what happened after Saqifa, you know, Banu Hashim did not pay allegiance to Abu Bakr. So they came to Ali. Now, among these people was Abbas, the uncle of the Prophet, and Abu Sufyan, who was very much against the bay'ah of Abu Bakr. He didn't want the bay'ah to go to that branch of Quraysh. As he mentioned in his sermon, in one of his khutbahs, Abu Sufyan, in one of his addresses, that this should not go to the meanest and lowest tribe of Quraysh. And this is, of course, the tribe of Abu Bakr in his eyes. So he was very much against this. Abbas, the uncle of the Prophet, was very much against this. And there is a story of this, inshallah, I will mention next week. But both of them came to Ali and said that, give your hand, we pay allegiance to you. And Abu Sufyan said, just give me the signal. I would fill the Medina with foot soldiers and with riders. And no one can defeat us. Now, of course, Amir al-Mu'mineen knows what is the purpose of Abu Sufyan. Abu Sufyan does not think about Islam. He is now thinking about who should rule, who should not rule. So, Amir al-Mu'mineen, of course, rejects them and says that, no, I'm not accepting this. I'm keeping quiet. And the things that he mentions here, inshallah, we'll discuss this next week. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa ala
for about 15 minutes, inshallah. The ladies would like to go first. Inshallah.
Sheikh, one question. You said Imam Ali, alayhi salam, said to over the bodies of Talha and Zubair, I knew the consequences, and that you also mentioned they wouldn't be forgiven. But didn't Imam Ali forgive them when he said release them and go? Wasn't that an act of forgiveness? Or that wasn't?
No, Imam Ali forgiving them is different from, I mean, the sin that they committed. I mean, he did forgive his own rights and he released them. But of course, they are held in the before Allah Subhanahu wa Taala for what they did, and especially even after they left, they were not content with that, and probably they had in their heart that they might want to come back and take a revenge or something like that. And it was the consequences of that betrayal. And even whether Amir al-Mu'mineen forgave them or did not forgive them, the consequences were going to befall them anyhow. Yes.
My question is related to the last week's lecture, that you mentioned that Imam Ali, the sermon of Shafi'a was actually because of emotions he said that the sermon that he said. Towards the end of the sermon, it seems that he stopped abruptly because somebody came and gave him a letter. Now, who was
the
person and what was
actually in the No, we don't know. Yeah, he was probably one of the messenger from one of the administrators of Amirul Mu'mineen coming from far away. But what was written in the letter, what was the message, it was not something which is recorded in the history, no.
Consequences that they felt on that were there. It sounds as if, you know, those consequences were very real in this world. But they didn't necessarily have to be in this world. I mean, could people commit sins like this and have no consequences in this world? And maybe even they get benefits like their own in this world and the consequences are on the next.
Yeah, it's possible, yeah. But anyhow, we have to expect some consequences to come. It might not come in this world, but it is in place to expect people who betray, who do wrong, to receive some sort of consequences in this world. Now, if they don't receive it, well, that's the worst for them, because they are going to have worse consequences in the next world. If they receive some of the consequences in this world, that's better for them, rather than leaving everything for the next world. Yes.
You talked about right in the beginning of your lecture, you talked about Imam Ali being very proud. In fact, he used the word boastful about his family, and you qualified it by saying it was exploded in terms of trouble. What do you mean by that? And could you use that same principle when he's come out in war and he's so forth, would he come to brag about his family and him?
No, it's different. I mean, it's different in war, because in war, everyone bragging about their family and. Now, it's like what the Prophet says, peace be on him, that I am the most honorable or the best of the children of Adam, وَلَا فَخْرٍ, and there is no boasting, of course. It's a reality, it's a truth that I'm mentioning, not that I'm boasting about it. As I said here, Amirul Mu'min, maybe boasting is not the right, correct term to use. Amirul Mu'min is also mentioning the honor of the Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet, and telling a truth about it without the type of boasting that comes to our hearts usually when we speak about these things. Alaykum
salam.
Yes.
But at the same time, in some of the conversation after the lover, he sort of contradicts himself. So one does think that Shashaban is a comfort.
What is 28 in Nahjul Balagha? Sorry, I don't know.
Also, moreover, Akrama, who regained this Shashaba, known by Imam Hadi, and also other books, that they do not accept his hadith, because we call him, he's from Khawarij, and he's a Kuwa Kazabun, he's a liar, so what's your opinion on this?
Well, walawla Nahyullah and Tazkiyat al-Mar' nafsahu is something which, of course, order of the Qur'an, a command of the Qur'an, فَلَا تُزَكُّوا أَنفُسَكُمْ. Do not purify yourself or do not honor yourself. Allah knows who is pure, who is not pure. Allah would honor you rather than you yourself honoring you. And in that khutbah as well, Amirul Mu'min says, if it was not for this, It was not for this prohibition that Allah says, do not somehow honor yourself. I would have said about my position. Now, we know that in many occasions the prophets had some praises for himself and for his Ahlul Bayt. So we shouldn't take this to be tazkiyatul mar'i nafsahu, of course. That's the second issue.
Even Kafi has mentioned that he died as a Khawarij, so he was the enemy of Allah. And also, so you cannot take things from him. And all the most profound scholars, like Allama Hilli and Allama Al-Maqali, or others, they do not accept his enemies. And what should he accept?
Now, I don't know which Akrama you are talking about, because we have several Akramas.
So,
I mean, all these people have spoken the same thing about an Akrama, but what Akrama, which Akrama he is, because you have to mention either his laqab or his kunya or name of his father. We have several Akramas, of course. However, the point is, this Shaqshaqiyya is not reported only through one chain. It has been reported through several chains, different chains of transmission. It doesn't come only through one person, whether Akrama or anyone else. And secondly, how would it be possible that a Kharijite person would report something like Sheikh Shaqiyya, which is all in praise of Ali and, of course, justification of his actions and these things? And thirdly, the people that you mentioned, like Allama Al-Hilli, Imam Qani, and others who have somehow impaired Akrama, they have accepted Shaqshaqiyya to be authentic. So therefore, it means that they have other chains for it, even if Akrama is the same Akrama as you mentioned, they have other chains for it, which would justify and authenticate. Sorry?
Akrama who redeemed the story from Ibn Abbas, and also in this particular khutbah, it seems Imam Ali
Now, let me finish with Akrama first of all. As I said, it is not possible that a person, a Kharijite, would speak something like this. Now, the other thing is, I mean, when we judge a report, we have to see whether the type of literature, the level of eloquence, would ever match the reporter himself or not. And those people who are expert in Arabic literature, like Ibn Abil Hadid, like Sharif al-Ravi, and like others, certainly Sharif al-Ravi never ever would report a hadith in Nahjul Balagha from a Kharijite. The character of Sharif al-Ravi that we know. I mean, when you are somehow criticizing Nahjul Balagha, you have to bear in mind the character of Sharif al-Razi himself, and you have to study a little bit about his life, his manners, his etiquette, his akhlaq, which is praised by both Sunnis and Shias, and because he was a very, very famous figure, the son of Abu Ahmad al-Naqib, the Naqib of all Shias. He was not some sort of unknown person. It's not possible that he reports something from a Kharijite. And as I said, Sharif al-Razi, Ibn Abil Hadid, Jahiz, people who were the peaks, the climax of Arabic literature, all of them have mentioned that it is not possible for an ordinary people. Now, when you are mentioning a Kharijite, all the world, to speak or to create or to make up an eloquent khutbah like this. As I said, Ibn Abil Hadid, who is a Sunni, of course, he has problem with this khutbah. He is in trouble with this khutbah. And he says, some people say that this is from the makings of Sharifur Razi, but I testify, according to my knowledge, that Sharifur Razi's level of eloquence was not this much. It is not something that could be made up by Sharifur Razi. I mean, we have to bring all these in mind. I know the problem, where the problem lies. The problem is that now here Amir al-Mu'minin is doing something which he usually didn't do, and that's criticizing the Khulafa. And that's why he says this is shakshakatun hadara. It was just something coming out, and I captured it now. You wouldn't hear something like this anymore. This is the problem, and we have to find some sort of justification for it. But certainly, criticizing one person in the chain, in one of the chains, justifying it by words of people who themselves believed in the authenticity of Sheikh Shaqiyah would not be a right justification. We have to find other justifications for this khutbah.
Inshallah,
what's that? Inshallah, what's that? Okay. Okay, inshallah. This is a long-lasting discussion. I don't think we can resolve it. Well, of course, everyone knew Arabic, but to be able to speak like it, it's just like, for example, all of us know Persian, but can we ever create a poet like Hafiz? Oh, no, never. It's impossible. Okay, I think the time is up. Okay, وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.